Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the, gosh, I don't have any words now. You caught me off guard,
Johnny. Oh, that's a shocker. Johnny and Billy here, and we talk about unique topics like cryptozoology and ghosts and conspiracy, near-death experience, and our guest today is Terry Rose. Now, I happen to know Terry's story for our listeners. Can you share your story, Terry?
You know, the thing that's a little bit strange with this is that I still have amnesia from that part of my life. A lot of what surrounded it, I had to learn from other people, and the doctors told me I would probably remember at some time, but I really never have. But from the moment that I woke up in the hospital, that's all that I knew was that I had been pulled from my body. I remembered that sensation of being pulled and like going into a vacuum or a darkness. It felt like a tunnel. It was just hard to describe, just lights, you know, flashing. I was flying through this area and this came out into this world of light. It was just an incredible experience. It was really more when I woke up, the thing that was strange about that is when I first really came to consciousness, I looked over and there was my mom and a good friend whose name was Mike. They were standing there and I said, "What happened?" And they both looked at each other. Their eyes rolled. They just had this kind of just exasperated look. And they just said, "Terry, look at your paper." And I looked down. I was holding this paper in my hand. And it said, "You were in a car wreck." And I looked back at him and I said, "Was anybody hurt?" And they said, "Terry, look at your paper." They looked at each other again. And that is really what brought me to consciousness. That's the first thing that I can really remember. I knew who I was. I knew all kinds of things. I knew people. But I just had no memory. I couldn't put things together. I didn't know where I was living at the time. Any of that. Somebody would walk in the room. I could talk to them, but I wouldn't even remember it seconds later. But that's the only thing that I knew, that experience was real to me. And so I kept asking them questions. They would say, "Look at your paper." So apparently I had been laying there for days asking those same questions in sequence, and they kept answering them. They finally decided they would write them out. But that's the first realization of being alive and being there, and I was so disoriented, but all I knew was that experience and that light and that being that I had stood before. It wasn't like a flash of my life. It was an experience of having to relive what I had gone through and all of my experiences, feel the emotions of them, and it was like a download of information, just being able to see from a different angle, being able to understand things that there's no way I even understand now, or I don't even have the language to explain it, but it was just a really strange experience of kind of having knowledge poured in that helped me see things through a different filter. And I was extremely angry at the time, so, and I didn't used to talk about this, but I don't really care anymore. I mean, I've gotten over it, and I've worked to heal myself for decades. But, you know, I was molested. I had a lot of things that happened when I was a teenager, and I was just so angry that I turned into an atheist, what I called, I called myself an atheist. I was angry at God. I said no God would create a world like this. I had people that I trusted, you know. I mean, it's the situation that we're finding out that a lot of people go through these days, boys and girls. But, you know, into my teenage years, people that I trusted, thank God it was not ever family. But, you know, the people I went to, I went one time and tried to talk to someone and ended up getting in trouble. So I just became very cynical about life. I just didn't trust anybody. At the same time, I used to play guitar and sing, so I had friends and I was outgoing in that sense, but inside it was just this anger and this hell that I lived in. And so that's when I had that car wreck. And that's all I remember is being that person and seeing that in my life review. And it was, it's hard to explain what that felt like to watch that in the presence of this being of light that to me represented God. But it was made very clear to me that I really couldn't even understand what God really is, or, you know, my interpretation of God was what I had been taught, and this experience was nothing like that. So it was just a being of love, and I was completely tapped in and felt a oneness like I'd never experienced, but yet my own identity still. And I just had to watch this person that was, and it was shown to me in a very loving way, but I just saw that it did not matter at all what was going on out there. It didn't matter what I, air quotes, you know, had done to me. What I was doing was impacting my own life. I was just shown how emotions are so important, and I was at the same time, and this is what is so hard to explain, and I've struggled with it to find the words to describe it all these years, and I still can't do it, but it was like a duality that I felt. I was in this presence of this absolute unconditional love and this being that took on the form of an older man, that it was conveyed to me that I was being shown that because that's what I could relate to. At the same time, that's really, God is so much more than that, or this spirit, or this universal intelligence, whatever you want to call it. People have their different names of calling it. I was raised to believe in God. Once I got over my resentment and healed a lot of things, I mean, I'm comfortable with whatever anybody wants to call it. I just know that I can't even begin to comprehend what it really is. Whatever it is, it loved me. And it felt like a supreme being, a supreme power. But yet I was one with it. As I watched my life, I felt that experience of being in the vibration of absolute unconditional love, while at the same time watching my life and reliving that and feeling that anger and that hatred and resentment and all of those dark emotions. And then just seeing that, the energy that I was creating and how what I did impacted the world. It actually sent, you know, other people were affected by my energy. So it was like I was given the chance, the experience to, you know, make a choice. It's like there's a choice point at everywhere along the line, and you can choose to be in that vibration, or you can choose love and to be in the higher vibrations of gratitude. That was the experience that I woke up with. And when I looked and I saw Mike and my mom standing there looking at each other, and I felt kind of humiliated and embarrassed, and why are they treating me that way? And then I went into my thoughts and knew this experience that I had just had, and it was just really strange. And so I was in the hospital about a week, and they wouldn't let me out until I kind of knew what was going on and could remember and tell them what day it was and who was president, you know, all those kind of things that they ask you. But that changed my life from that point on. I kind of lived in an inner hell because I could not talk to people about it. When I tried, I did not get anywhere. I just certainly didn't get where I wanted to be. So I just kept it inside and really tried to figure it out and figure out how to change myself for about 25 years before I would even talk about it. And then after the rolled into the 2000s, I just kept feeling this urge like I had to start talking about it a little bit. And that's when I started making some videos, and by about 2005 I had written my ebook and put it out there with a bunch of stories, and then started being more open about it.
After the wreck and after your near-death experience, you came out with like an amnesia?
They said I had head, neck, and back injuries, basically was what my medical report was, but I still can't remember that part of my life. I don't even know what date it was. At that point, we didn't have computers, and what I was told was that the guy that turned in front of me, it was a 4-lane highway going out of town, so it was, you know, probably 50, 60 miles an hour, and he just turned in front of me at an intersection right as I got there. So he knew the cop, apparently, so he didn't get a ticket or anything. I don't even know if it was in the papers or anything. What I did was drive everybody crazy after I got better, asking them every question I could think of because I wanted to remember so badly. And there was a guy, a friend of mine was visiting from out of town, and I was taking him out to see my horses. It was like pulling teeth. You know, I wanted to know every single detail. Well, what were we talking about? What were there other cars around us? I kept thinking something would spark my memory. And he got very irritated with me pretty quickly. You know, kept saying, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was looking out the window, not paying attention. But he couldn't really remember anything. He couldn't give me the details that I wanted. So I never was able to find out much of anything. I was just taking him out to see my horses is all that I know. That's all that I remembered waking up in the hospital. And so people tried to tell me that I was crazy, and that's fine. You know, that's one of the reasons that I didn't talk about it for a long time. When I did get out, and I remember the one day, and this was so painful for me, I couldn't talk about this for years either, but my dad had a room, an office in the basement of our house, and he was down there. And I went down to, I was just so upset about this because I had gone to a church. I had tried to talk to a priest about it. And basically everybody just kept telling me I had head injuries. I know the experience was real. It changed my entire life. I became obsessed with it. It's on my mind every single day. You know, it still is. Everything I see and do goes through the filter of that experience. Knowing what I had to see in my life and the regrets that I had. So if somebody wants to say it happened in my brain, I mean, that's fine. To me, it didn't. I remember the physical sensation of, like, being in the, kind of sucked or out of my body or just leaving, and this feeling of being in that vacuum and then the freedom of going into this world of light. It was real to me, you know, and I've had a lot of people that have said, It doesn't happen. It happens in your brain, or people will question me. Sometimes I can be a little bit of a smart ass about things, which I remember I kind of felt bad one day at the birthday party of my mom's, and one of her friends, an older friend, somehow the situation came up, and she said to me, well, you know, that just happens in the brain. And I said something like, well, I'm, you know that people that aren't, you know, intelligent enough to look at the fact that there's a lot of studies of people that have been in the hospital wired up, and they're absolutely brain dead, and sometimes for hours, and yet they come back and have this experience. So if there's no electrical activity in your brain, then how can this be happening in the brain? So,
right.
You know, I let people say what they want to. It still is my experience, and I'll take whatever I was meant to have from it, you know. It's a big part of my life.
How can people who are dead know what other people said and did and are wearing in other rooms on different floors of, let's say, a hospital when they shouldn't know any of that information if they're dead?
Yeah, exactly. And I used to get irritated by that and you know, have some things that I would come back, you know, when people said, but you know, I've really mellowed over the years, and it just doesn't matter. It's their belief system, and I don't know why people want to try to prove so hard that it doesn't happen. But that's, you know, that's what a lot of people do. At least I have seen that, and I'll have people on my YouTube videos in different places. They're just on there trashing me, calling me every name in the book. Say, you know, it's either Satan is working through me, or I'm the devil, or and then somebody else will come back on the other side, and they'll be defending me. They'll be saying, Terry didn't mean that. She's not saying that. And then the other one will come back and argue. And I just sit back and look at this and listen. You know, it's just hilarious, really, when you think about it. People want to argue and just get so triggered over things. So.
And those of us that have not had this experience, we wonder why people like you and Bill hold it in for decades. It's because when you don't, that's what happens, right?
Yeah, you know, and I don't think that I did finish that story with my dad, though, but that's what, when I stood there, and I'm a coach, so I've taken a lot of different training, and one of the things that helped me heal myself on this was, sometimes you look for the detail. Like what I found is if you can go back into memories, and sometimes you can figure out that one thing. It was the sound of somebody's voice or the way they looked or whatever. That can be very healing. And I literally, this is one of those times when I literally healed this pain in seconds. It was just gone, and it's something I carried for probably 25 years. But I went back, and decided I was going to sit down and really think about that. And it was the look in his eyes. And I stood there, and I thought he was going to come back with something to console me. So I went down into his office in the basement. He was sitting at his desk, and I was kind of standing there leaning against the door and asked him if I could talk to him. I told him the whole story of what I felt like happened, and he just sat there looking at me. And that was the moment. That was the healing that I needed. Because it was that look in his eye where I thought he was listening and understanding and going to come out with something fatherly and console me. And instead he said, "Terry, don't ever tell that story to anybody again. They're going to think you're crazy, and they're going to lock you up. And if they don't do that, they're going to, you should probably realize that was probably the devil. That could have been the devil, you know, when you had that experience." So that was so crushing to me.
Wow.
That I just said, I'm never talking to anybody about this again. I'm not, this sacred experience that I had to have people tell me that I'm crazy or that I am the devil or that was the devil. And it was just so painful that I didn't talk about it to anybody. There were a couple times when somebody was like on their deathbed and, I was talking to them, somehow it came out, you know, or I know one time one lady asked me if I would actually talk to her husband who was dying. So I had a couple of experiences like that, kind of sworn to secrecy. I just didn't want it, you know, to be out there as fodder for other people to be acting like it was the devil. Because, and what I say to people too, when I'm in my kind of smart ass mode is, you know, I don't care. Call it the devil. If the devil can have changed my life like this, like it has, and, you know, everything is about inner peace and gratitude and having a higher vibration and helping people, not being angry, healing the things within myself so that I can be at a higher resonance and help lift other people up. If that's what the devil does in your life, then fine. Call it the devil. I don't care. It really, truly did change me that way. So it's kind of just interesting to me now to see people's reaction, the different ways, and especially scientists that will do everything they can to prove and say that it doesn't happen.
You know, some that have had a near-death experience, they remember, like, jumping out of their body, and then they're up in the ceiling in the corner looking down on their dead body. Now, do you remember if something like that happened when you jumped out?
No, I don't. The only thing that I remembered, and the other part of it was coming back. I remember the sensation. You know, there's these certain things that really stick in your mind, like the lessons that I brought back with me, and that's a part of what is just so strong in my memory, is the feeling of freedom when I was out, and then the feeling of restriction coming back into my body. But it was more about the feeling, and the first thing I remember, it was like a black dark tunnel, but it had light just like way out in a distance. It's almost like maybe flying through the universe. I'm not really sure. But it was from there, and then seeing this light and then just entering this area of light. And I know a lot of people talk about relatives are there and different things. To me, it was all this being. It was just this amazing being of light that took on that image of the man. You know, he's an older man with gray hair and a beard and just absolute love, and that was so comforting and loving. And, you know, it was more of those feelings that I remembered. I didn't see anything like, you know, like you're mentioning.
When you came back, did you have a problem adjusting with not being in that light and love?
Yeah, absolutely. I was so disoriented, and the biggest thing that got me was knowing the feeling of being there and then being back here. And it was like that was home. Being there was home to me. I am careful when I say this, and here I am saying it on radio, but, you know, I'm very careful. But I, I tell people all the time that I can't wait to die. I mean, I think a lot of us feel that way. I don't have kids or family. I think that's another thing that's different when you have kids that you want to stay here for. I mean, at that time, I was very young, and so none of that really came into play. But to me, I can't wait to get back there. And I feel so bad for people that are so afraid of death. That's what really is, you know, I just wish I could somehow share that with people to help them understand that that's really, that's where it's at. You know, I mean, my mom just passed away at Christmas, and, you know, it tears me up in many ways, and I miss her. But to think that she is there in that place and on that adventure, to me, it's just, it's the next adventure that we head into. Bill, did you feel that way? I mean, do you look forward to going back?
I do look forward to going back, and I think I'm not eager to die, but I'm certainly not afraid of it. When it's my time, I'll go, and I'm looking forward to that, because the older I get, the more difficult life gets, and I just don't want to suffer, that's all. I don't want to have to suffer any more pain in order to get to the other side.
Yeah, pain sucks.
It does.
Pain's an old friend, right?
That's right. That's what I tell people. You have to make friends with the pain. Otherwise, it'll eat you up.
Now, you talked a little bit about a life review. Can you explain that?
Well, for me, the memory when I woke up in the hospital, the memory was of standing in front of this being of light and being shown my life in a way that was to help me understand that I was really missing the boat, you know, that I was destroying my life, myself, by letting things that happened, you know, somebody else out there, things that someone else had done, that I was carrying that with me and carrying that into the future. And for me, which is really strange, I've never really heard anybody else talk about it in the same way. A lot of people I know have relatives or meet with different people. Some people go on these adventures and have all kinds of things happen. But for me, it was really just living and experiencing those emotions and getting the understanding that everything really is a vibration, that being able to understand, or I don't really know how to describe it exactly, because a lot of this evolved when I woke up and I was just obsessed with learning more about this and understanding. What I wanted to understand more about was the vibrations of emotions and how to get my emotions under control. And so that's what I, when I, as I watched my life review, I was living these scenes, and I was feeling, I was experiencing the feeling at the time in the memory, but at the same time experiencing this love, carrying that anger and having that infect everything that I do and impact everybody that I'm around, or healing it. So I always say, you know, I did not wake up in the hospital with an instruction manual, and I didn't wake up with any idea of, okay, I just need to do this. There was nothing there other than this drive to change myself. So I had to figure it out. And so that's the memory of regret that I, you know, I believe when I go back again, I will see my life. I will see what I did from that time forward.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and more coming up with Terry Rose and her near-death experience.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. So we're talking with Terry Rose, near-death experiencer.
So many people that were around me saw the changes in me over time, and then I became so fascinated by the how we're able to change our reality by using the power of our mind and our focus and our energy And so I really came up with this formula that is pretty much, I would say, 100% effective when you do all of the parts of it, where you are controlling what you're thinking and your imagination, and then you control that left brain, all the self-talk, the conversations, and then you control your emotions. And so through time, trying to figure out, you know, what I saw in my life review and how to change those emotions, because when I came back, I was still triggered by everything. I mean, the fact that I went and tried to talk to a priest and he's telling me I had head injuries made me very angry. So I had all the conversations going on in my head, and I'm, you know, thinking of all these things all the time, and then I'm feeling the negative emotions. So that's where I just started really studying the science. I mean, I went to doctors everywhere. I tried doing everything to feel better physically, because I was diagnosed with everything imaginable. I mean, I had diabetes to the point they told me I would be on insulin the rest of my life, and I'm not. You know, I've been able to self-heal all of these negative, just about everything. I've still got something from my childhood that I'm working on, but what I've been able to figure out, the emotional component, and this sounds so crazy to people that are not open to this, that have never really had something that, you know, that's opened their mind to it, but I absolutely believe that there is that emotional component, and that's what I was shown in that life review, that it was my out-of-control emotions, my anger and resentment, that was, it was sending poison to my cells. It was a vibration that was creating my own health situations, plus it was going out and it was affecting other people. So that's what I just started studying anything that I could, and I remember the first book, when I found a book talking about vibrations and emotions, and then later Dr. Candace Pert, her book, The Molecule of Emotions, there were all these things that I was able to find that showed how our emotions really do cause a lot of our physical ailments that we have.
Right.
I'm able to heal myself. You know, literally overnight when I start getting the flu or a earache or a cold or whatever, because that's what I do. I stop and I go and look for the emotions, the subconscious thoughts and emotions or what's been going on. And then I do energy work or breath work or something to shift out of that negativity, and then use the power of my visualization to bring in a new vision and the vision of healing. And I use the light, the vision of that light that I saw in my wreck, in my, you know, that world I was in, just imagining that light going into whatever the physical thing is. And so it's a pretty fascinating thing. But to me, the whole thing with my life review, what I brought back was just the power of our emotions and how they do set up a frequency of energy that affects our world.
You know, it seems like so many people are sure they have something wrong instead of like changing their mindset to tell themselves that they're fine. They just try to spin it to where there's something wrong with them.
I can think myself sick. Just the way that I
feel. Right, I can think myself sick.
So easily, you know. And I'm looking at myself. So now I'm at this point of being belligerent about it, you know. I probably have to work on that. But I'm like, no, I'm not gonna go out. You know, I go out to my mailbox and I was coming in and washing my hands, you know, or taking a napkin out. So if I touch something,
mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, look at what they do. You know, this
right.
Reminds me, one of my other pet peeves, that, you know, pharmaceuticals, being commercials, every commercial, you know, around the prime time, dinner time, whatever, it's, I don't really watch TV much at all anymore, but I mean, I know when I was watching it, getting so irritated about it, they're showing the studies that they were doing, it was something like 25 or 35% more sales on whatever that drug, you know, that they were doing, the different drugs on, I think, cholesterol, or one of them was what they were talking about, healthy people that didn't even have a problem because they were seeing this commercial, they were going and asking for this drug from their doctors.
Wow.
I mean, why should we be the ones that are diagnosing and being told what we need? And it says on those commercials, go ask, you know, ask your medical professional or whatever about this drug.
Right.
And that's what people were doing. And so their sales went up. it just makes me crazy to think that if people can understand that they, you know, I've got a new thing. I've decided. I've been meditating on, you know, where I'm going with my life. And I think I'm going to start a podcast called Free Brainwashing. I bought that domain, freebrainwashing.com. You know, I'm just going to set it up and I'm going to start talking about this stuff more, because if people could realize they are being brainwashed by this stuff, and you can brainwash yourself
right
just as easily, you know?
You know what bugs me with this near-death experience and folks like you and Bill that had access to unlimited information and lessons? Nobody seemed to think about looking up who actually killed John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't in the book that I got to look
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it's easier said than done, too, you know.
It's the conversation of coming up with that term, conspiracy theory, to label that so that anybody that questioned John Kennedy's death, call it conspiracy theory. And that's where that really came. And it's what they're doing these days. Anything that anybody brings up to check on or talk about anything that goes against what the standard line is or what we're supposed to believe, it's labeled a conspiracy theory. And it's even like 9/11. How people, that, you know, I've seen these, the signatures and the engineers and the people. I saw one guy that was a firefighter that was in charge of it. He said he couldn't say a word because he would have lost all of his retirement and his pension. But after he retired, he said, I went in that building, the third building, said that, you know, they had that cleaned up so quickly and there is no way in the world. He said, I've been doing this all my life. And there is no way in the world that a building looks like that unless it's something was put in there. You don't get, the flames don't get that hot to melt and to do what they did in that building. And he said, they don't let people come in and look at it and do studies and testing. They just came in and scraped the whole thing up and cleaned it up and took it away. And nobody even talks about that building.
That's a conspiracy theory. Tom Powell, he's a Bigfoot researcher, and he has this theory that we're like all linked to this huge database of information that living, and then when our physical bodies die, and it kind of makes sense from what you and Bill have talked about with the access to information in the afterlife. How come we can't tap into that same information in our living bodies? Does that make sense?
We can.
Well, how? I mean, how can we get that same information that you had access to when you're dead?
Yeah, I'd have to agree that we can. When I'm coaching people, that's exactly what it's about. The first step is, I believe, it's like where I was. My emotions were out of control and were focused on the world out there. I have these stories, my life, my, you know, it's incredible the examples of things that I can use. And it sounds so insane. You know, if I wasn't in this world myself, I understand how people can stand back and they think you're crazy when you talk about these things. We are in an information highway. We really are connected, because just one example, one day, there were these products, they were, you know, healthy things, they changed people's health, they were actual physical machines and, you know, purified air and did different things, and I loved them, and I saw so many results, and I ended up selling them for a while, and then I got busy with other things, and there were thousands of dollars sitting there, and one day, it's probably been sitting there for a year, one day I walked by, and I thought, oh, I need to sell those. This is the power of intention, and how we have to be connected to a grid. Information that comes and goes, or these things couldn't happen. And this is just one example. And it sounds crazy, and I usually am pretty careful about talking about some of these things just publicly, because they do sound nuts, and I understand that, you know, but I'm doing it more and more because I just don't really care anymore. You know, I'm older, and plus I feel like, you know, we've got to do something to turn things around in the world, and we have this power to tap into information and to put information out there and to make these connections. And that's really now what I feel like. If I'm going to do anything with the rest of my life, it's trying to make people aware that this is possible. So I walk by, and here's this pile of machines that was worth, you know, thousands of dollars. And I got this thought, well, I really need to sell those. So it just happened to be one of those moments where this thought came over to me very easily. Now, this is what I call the formula, the triangle for success. If you figure out, you know, you figure your right brain is always, it's imagining, it's reflecting back on memories, it's seeing images and symbols and pictures. That's its language. The left brain is that analytical self-talk. So those are the two sides of the brain. So you can see that it's two sides of the triangle. And then the base is your heart, your emotions. So it's your brain and your heart. They're always in action. They're always working. And now we know from studies that are done that your heart actually receives information and sends it to your brain. Plus, there's a neurological system within your heart that is like the brain. There's actual neurons in your heart. So studies show that it receives some information and it sends it to your brain, and your brain then is also sending out information. But we didn't used to know that. So where's your heart getting this information from? You know, it's reading it like your autonomic nervous system reads the information, and it, and there's this highway of information that brings it in, and it comes into your heart, and it's analyzed. And so we are able to create intentions. It picks up information. It brings it to people. Your brain makes you aware of things if you are in a state of awareness. So you're picking up information from out there, and it, you become aware of it. You can also then create your intention and send it out there, and it's waves of energy. So I look at this pile of machinery, and I think, oh, I need to, you know, I should sell that. So I did this process. I created a vision. You know, you think in your imagination, and you can use anything. I mean, there's different ways, and that's a whole story in itself. But, you know, whatever comes to mind. So for me, the image that came to mind right then was just seeing those boxes, everything turning into waves of energy, going out into the universe and connecting with the people that needed them, who could be helped by them. And then it returned to me as a pile of money. And so it was just this really wonderful little flash of inside information, my brain, my subconscious, my higher power, who knows, you know, I mean, we call it whatever you want, but it came to me, and so you haven't want to put an emotion with it, so I felt grateful that it was happening, and then the self-talk is always has to be something that supports it also. The conversations you have with other people and with your own self, where instead of saying, oh, well, they probably won't sell, or who's going to want that, or, oh, they've been sitting around a long time. No, my conversation was, my heart was grateful because these were going to people that needed them and could be helped by them. There's my triangle. You know, my right brain had an image, my left brain had self-talk, and then my heart had emotions. I stood there. This is one of those times. It happened. Sometimes it happens instantly, where things will appear or things will happen and my life will change. And I am talking about in an instant or within 12 hours. And in this case, I started getting phone calls of people wanting those machines. And every one of them was sold within a week or two or whatever. It's been a few years ago now, and I don't remember the exact details. But one of them that just really says, how does this happen? That one guy just showed up. He had, you know, he just wanted to pay me for it. He said, I was at, you know, one of your customers. I was in this the commercial building, and I saw this, and he told me to contact you. He paid me the money, and I'm always big on doing follow-up, making sure somebody's happy. I wanted to do that. No, that's fine. You know, I mean, he came into my life, handed me money, and disappeared with that box.
Wow.
You know, I went to my chiropractor, and he brought it up. I don't know whether I said something about it or whatever, but he went launched into this thing saying, you know, I've been thinking about the law of attraction, and I'm going to buy more, and I want to pay full price for things because I've, you know, I just feel like it gets you in the flow of having money coming and going, and I want to buy one of those, and I want to pay full price. This is the stuff that happens when you realize the power we have. How did that connect with other people? From all over, you know, California, even a relative called and said that they wanted one. I mean, it was just, it's so amazing to me, the power that we have. And this is what I was shown in my NDE, that just the power, our emotions create energy that goes out into this information highway. And all these studies now and the power of intention, where that you can sit and do something there, you know, Dr. William Tiller has done a lot of things with changing the pH of water, the liver enzymes, you know, healing animals, having control groups. It's just crazy that we have this ability. So that's the long way around your question, you know, about why can't we tap into it? But I believe we can, and that's just one aspect of it. You know, and so when I'm coaching somebody, the first thing, you have to get control of emotions, and you have to be able to learn to be present and be aware. What I called is, you know, you're either consciously creating or you're robotically reacting. And that's what I was doing when, in my car wreck, in that NDE. That's what I saw. I was a robotic reactor. Anybody out there wanted to say something to me that upset me? And there I go, you know, blowing up, and I'm ranting and raving, and I'm going to get this person, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to pay this person back. They can't do that to me, you know. And now I have this stillness that I go into, this inner world of stillness, and I create, and I have these things show up in my life that are just absolutely incredible. And believe me, I could talk for 2 weeks without stopping about the, you know, real examples of that. This is the piece that I think most people are missing, because we're taught to say positive affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
But what I teach people to do is find the right statement with whatever qualifiers they need at the time so that it makes sense. Because there's two ways of doing this. If you're in a, if you know, you get in the zone sometimes where everything's going great and you can say, I'm going to make $1 million. And then some opportunity comes along to make $1 million. Because you're feeling it, and you're just on a roll, and it's, there's just something about it, your energy, and you can attract that into your life. And, you know, people feel good being around you. You raise other people up to a higher level, and they want to be around you. They want to be in your world, and they see how you can benefit them, you know, if they work with you or whatever. That's the very positive aspect. But how many people are able to do that?
Right.
I mean, do you know people that, how many people... They say positive affirmations all their life, and nothing changes.
Yeah.
And this is what the difference is. There are these core beliefs that are there, and sometimes they're inherited. They're in our genes. They're passed down. They're belief systems. And then we're raised in a family situation where the conversations are all around the fact that you've got to work hard for your money or whatever it is. You know, money is one of the biggest issues, or health is the other one. You know, well, my grandfather had this, you know, and I got heart attacks in the family, so I'm going to, you know, I'm probably going to get one. I might die young. That's a belief system. And there, you think of the triangle, the two sides of your brain. What do? You're visualizing death in your family, heart attacks. You set up the emotion of expectation. You know, look at how many people, they die when they expect to, and the ones that don't until after a holiday or a specific thing happens. The affirmation part of it is very important. You have to find something that feels good in your body, and that's the piece that people make. They're in their head saying things, but you have to say something that feels good in your body. That's when you're really setting up the actual vibration. And we have technology that they can measure that energy going out from your body, and it changes when you change your emotions. So it's all fascinating to me. I try to boil it down and keep it really simple, but, you know, when people are saying affirmations, are you feeling it? Can you feel it? And this is where there are actual techniques that you just have to do. You have to practice things. You have to train your body to feel emotions and be able to feel them on command. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, you don't do it just because you want to do it. And you say, "Oh, I'm gonna have this vacation. I'm gonna buy this new boat or this new car, or I'm gonna get this job or this relationship." Then when they go and they're thinking about it, and I tell people, listen to your conversations. What do you say to your coworkers and your family and people that you're around? And when you're sitting daydreaming, what are you saying to yourself? They're usually thinking about what they don't have and what they don't like. And that's setting up that vibration of energy that's going out onto the information highway, and it's just keeping that momentum going in their life. I mean, that's a real simplified version of it, but that's
right.
Basically what's happened.
Hey, Bill, I know we lost you there for a second, but did you have any questions or anything you wanted to throw in there before we wrap up?
No, I thought Terry was doing a good job. Basically, everything that she described about the near-death experience chimes with my experiences with it and with different people. And I know some experiences are a little different, and I have some theories about that, but I won't go into them today. but I really enjoyed hearing you talk about your experience today, Terry. It really was valuable, I think, for everybody listening.
Well, I hope so. That's really the only point of wanting to do this. I'm perfectly happy to sit it in my own little world, my imagination, and do these things. But if it can help anybody else, I love being able to do that.
How can I find out more information on you, your near-death experience, what you have going on?
Well, I'm at a transition point in my life right now, which I was really had kind of pulled away from doing too much, but I kind of feel fired up with what's going on out in the world these days, and I just think, you know, we are too powerful to ignore what the abilities we have. So I actually just started setting up my free brainwashing.com website that I have my coaching that I've had for a long time is Peace of Success Coaching, PEACE, like Love and Peace, mm-hmm. of Success Coaching.com.
Okay.
And another part of my story I didn't even get into, but I went through a really, really bad stretch. I call it the dark night of my soul, which I'm thankful for now, because everything that happened in my life, I kept using these techniques. My skills developed more, and it was really good. But all my websites crashed. I mean, everything. My sister died. My dog died.
Wow.
You know, everything.
That's a country western song.
Yeah, really. I mean, it was about like that, and it went on for, I mean, even though all my backups, all that happened at once, and so I lost everything. So a lot of things I kind of slapped back up, and, you know, that's what I'm kind of thinking. I might actually do the free brainwashing site and actually make it into a blog. So I'm kind of in transition right now with all of that, but I also have another site. I have my free ebook and free meditation at whitelightmethod.com. So I know that that's something anybody can get and download. And so I'm, you know, right now I'm just trying to get some videos going again and a lot of things. So I'm not positive what I'm doing, but those are some of the sites that I have.
Will you come back on the show and talk with us when you get your affairs in order?
I would love to. It's hard. You get out there and you talk about this, and then you get all the people, you know, that want to fight you on it. And I'm thinking, man, I can just be using this myself and,
right,
you know, putting good energy out there and helping people in other ways. You know, do I really want to be out there publicly again going through this? But
well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yes, thank you very much, Terry.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to listen to back episodes, read some strange news, strange stories, or yell at Bill for his New Age TUI, log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.